You're listening to a 4x4 Radio Network podcast.
The Center Steer Podcast, a Land Rover podcast by Land Rover owners. Center Steer Podcast. It is December 27th, 2015. The weather here in the wonderful southwestern Pennsylvania is rainy and unseasonably warm. Thankfully, it's not too cold, or it'd be, several feet of snow. But joining us today, we have a special guest all the way from the other side of the continent in Gig Harbor, Washington, is Brian from Defenders Northwest. Say hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Wonderful to have you. Thanks for joining us. Brian, we'll talk to Brian later in the show about all things Defender Northwest, Defenders Northwest, and a little teaser, it's in the title. That probably won't mean anything to anybody. You have to re-listen to the podcast and then...
Or hit the website after it publishes and read the title. And
joining me in the studio as part of the usual contributing panel is...
I'm Harold.
And all the way from the wonderful Green Mountain State.
Yes, you finally got it right. They are still green. There's no snow up here, although it tried to snow today.
Did it?
So yes, hello, I'm Morgan from Vermont.
Welcome, Morgan. Thanks for joining us. One of our usual contributors, Dave, is not feeling well. It has decided not to bring the germs to the studio.
Well, I think Christmas maybe got the best of him.
He told me he was
had a house full of sick kids, I recall.
Yes, and he said he was the least... sick in the house.
Well, at the time.
Yeah, this was 2 hours ago.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
it was 2 hours ago.
Then it's not done yet.
Indeed it is not. So we will launch ourselves first, as we normally do, into the news. And it has been another wonderful sales report for JLR in November. Sales were the best ever. Or as my friend Ed would say, they're even more better than October. So sales were up. In November, 27% for November 2014, the company sold 437,512 vehicles in the first 11 months of 2015, 4% up for the same period in the prior year. So things.
And I believe October was the best yet October as well.
That
so
is correct.
It's a pretty good run.
Indeed. Did you listen to the last podcast since you couldn't join us? You did. Did your research?
I did. Yeah.
You did your homework. Yes.
Well, one of us did then.
It's a little more specific here. Best sellers for the month included the Sport, Range Rover Sport. I'm going to specify which one. 13% up year on year. The regular Discovery was up 7%. And the regular Range Rover was up 15%. And the new Discovery Sport continues to grow in popularity with sales of nearly 10,000 units in the month. And I should also mention that Jaguar was up, simply because you're a big Jag fan, Harold, up 33% from November. So that's actually a good sign for them.
It is good.
Yes. Overseas region, they were up 29% year-on-year basis. Sales of the new XE, there's no K in there, XE were almost 4,000 units for the month. They sold a total of almost 20,000 units since beginning the summer, so... There you go. And so that's doing well. Sales are continuing to do well. Along those lines, JLR, we reported in the past, are expanding their production around the globe. The Brazil plant is about to come online, and they are going to produce the Range Rover Evoque. They will produce the Disco Sport in April, or that's when it will go on sale. And then there's some discussion that they may also do a Jag, I believe, at that plant at some point. So they are... expanding into Brazil, and that plant is up and running. There's a new plant that they are going to build in Slovakia to start selling cars in 2018. So JLR has actually confirmed they're going to open a manufacturing facility in Nitra, Slovakia, a £1 billion investment. They hope to employ 2,800 people.
And I believe last time we checked in on that, they had just signed an intent. So this is, moving along pretty reasonably.
Indeed. It looks like here this new factory will build a series of JLR aluminum models. The first cars come off the production line in late 18. A new factory will have an initial capacity of 150,000 vehicles, and its construction will begin in 16. So good for Slovakia, I suppose. And there is some discussion that JLR expanding the Castle Bromwich former Dunlap site. So the Dunlap Motorsport facility in in Castle Bromwich closed. JLR purchased the property, and they're planning to utilize it for further expansion of its base in North Birmingham. There were some specifics there. We'll have a link in the show notes, of course, if you want to read the full story. The Dunlap Motorsport apparently was also a World War II site, and they manufactured the submarine Spitfire airplanes for the war effort. So there's a little bit of history there. Then again, where in the UK is there not history, I suppose?
That's the whole beauty of it.
That's true. And, yes, well, it is the size of, the UK is the size of Pennsylvania and New York put together, so I'm sure you're bound to trip over some history there. Finally, on the expansion and growth side, this has not been confirmed, but there are reports, you know, rumor, hints, and innuendo that JLR wants to buy the Silverstone motor circuit and move headquarters there and build a heritage site, a heritage center.
I think that could be really cool. As long as they don't develop it like somebody did Brooklands back in the day.
Hmm.
Which ceases to exist.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
And I believe that Silverstone has officially stated that JLR has not, you know, made any offers at this point, but who knows?
That's
of course they're going to say that. They don't want to queer the deal by talking too much.
Indeed. Although, interesting part of the article here says that Silverstone management has had a loss of rental income. And they have been having trouble paying their annual Formula One Grand Prix fee of nearly $24 million. So,
ouch.
Yeah. Nothing about Formula One is cheap.
Clearly not. Clearly not.
In fact, it's all ridiculous money. The one interesting thing is that if they do expand and move into Silverstone and put in the Heritage Motor Center there, I wonder what that does to the new work they're doing at the existing British Motor Museum. Wonder how that impacts that.
Well, they have a heritage center there. It's a small one, but
right.
They maybe that, you know, it's not that that facility would be too far from that site from Gaydon.
Right.
So it's possible it might.
I wonder if it takes away from them or enhances it somehow.
Well, the heritage center looking to expand and change, and they're already closed right now, and they're going to open in April. Possibly that might give them, if they were to lose the Heritage Center, that might give them more space for whatever they want to do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It might help them.
Yeah, not sure. That's assuming if this Silverstone thing goes through.
Right.
Yeah. Welcome back, listeners, to the podcast. You didn't know, but we took a short break while we handled some technical issues, and Morgan is now working correctly, right?
Yes, I should be. You should hear fewer of my coughs and sniffles here.
He's activated his cough button. He's found his cough button. So JLR is going to enter Formula E, which is an all-electric racing a series. At least that's what the plan is.
Cool.
Pretty cool. I've followed various electric racing over the years, and it certainly, it's more of a research-type event. Doesn't drum up as much attention as normal petrol racing does.
So this is an all electric race, like the vehicle's entirely electric.
Battery powered, electric motor, and
is it a circuit or is it like on road or is it a track?
It looks just like a Formula One race, only they're powered with electric motors, and you don't get the lovely 12 cylinders spinning at 17,000 RPM and giving you the nice symphony.
You get brushless motors that spin.
The experience is different in that regard.
Of course.
But, you know, bring your own soundtrack and it's a lovely show.
Right.
Definitely. And it sounds like this one has 10 teams, each with two drivers that race on temporary city street circuits. So a little more like the, you know, Pittsburgh Grand Prix, right?
The Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix, yes, sir.
Vintage Grand Prix.
But often in conjunction with a lot of other racing series, they'll double it up with an Indy race or a Formula One race, for that matter, depending on where they are.
Yep, totally. Now, one of the racing circuits I followed in the past, in the sort of early days of electric racing, there was a pretty good car that was based on a Subaru Impreza, and it actually had significant advantages being all-wheel drive. Because when you get into corners, instead of having to use your brakes, you can use four-wheel regeneration to recharge your pack. So I would assume that Land Rover is going to be the same way.
Or you can use three-wheel regeneration and one under power if you really want to get trick about it.
Totally. I don't know that they set theirs up to be that advanced. But that would be even better.
Could be.
And moving on into more specifically, the 2 millionth Defender that came off the line, which is technically, to be clear, is part of the Defender series line that goes back to the original 1948 Series 1.
Utilitarian variant number 2 million.
Sold for a record £400,000 at auction.
Yes.
So that's closer to $800,000 right now, or it has
about $640,000.
$640,000, okay.
$640,000, $650,000, yeah.
Plus buyer's premium.
Yep. No, I think that was waived.
Really?
Yeah, because all the proceeds went to two charities. That went to the Born Free Foundation. They split it between the Born Free Foundation and the International Red Cross.
Okay.
So I think even the premium is was waived.
The auction house. Donated their cut.
That's my understanding.
Interesting.
I could be
okay.
wrong.
All right. So it's a bargain then.
It is a bargain. It was the highest paid at auction for a production Land Rover ever,
yeah.
beating the next one, which was a restored 1970 Range Rover that sold for £132,000.
Well, that's either way. It's far more than I would or could pay.
And it was purchased over the phone by a Qatari or gutter, depending on how you like to say, Q-U-Q-A-T-A-R. So.
And so was there anything, I mean, obviously this was an autobiography spec model, but was there anything beyond the Red Wharf Bay engraving on the wing?
It was the manufacture and production of it was assisted by special luminaries in the Land Rover world, including Bear Grylls, Roger Cranthorn, the Shark Tank guy. I can't think of Theo. I think it's Theo Theopolis or something. I can't find his name right now. But they all helped in the production of the vehicle.
Assembled by a who's who.
Yes, assembled by a who's who.
Hopefully while being supervised by those who know how to do it.
I'm pretty sure. Well, you saw they had that video, so they were supervised.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the LRO magazines.
I'm all for having celebrities do this kind of stuff, but you kind of want to make sure they know what they're doing before you turn them loose with the spanners.
And it had a special number plate, S90HUE. It's a homage to being built at Sully Hall. There's your S. It is a 90, so that was the 90. And, of course, HUE166 was the number plate for the first pre-production Land Rover that now sits at the Heritage Motor Center.
Soon to be known as the British Motor Museum.
Well done. So that was the last, theoretically, the last Defender. They're still going to produce more, as everyone knows. Looks like production's going through till April. This was originally, this month was supposed to be the final month of the production of the Defender, but that has been extended as they produce more. I assume all of us here on the North American continent have their orders in.
Yeah, mine's going to be here next week.
Good. You spent £400,000, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, exactly.
you're the calling quick Qatari yes. on the phone.
Yes. Plus the $2 million I had to grease various politicians with to get it past customs.
Well, wouldn't that be a special one that you could bring in for a short period of time, yeah. or even a period of time since it was a special unit?
Well, one would think you could get an exhibition variance, but you know, Defenders have a sweet spot amongst customs
yes.
now.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Especially since they were overruled too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Well, the next Defender, its replacement. We mentioned this, I believe, on the last podcast, but it's worth mentioning again that the next Defender, according to Chief Designer Jerry McGovern from Land Rover, says it will bear no resemblance to any of the concepts that have been seen so far.
First smart thing I've heard him say.
Now, bearing no resemblance doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be anything we would like.
No, but it's a step in the right direction.
Are you sure?
I offer a kind golf clap, so it's hopeful, but not worth too much.
Do you hear that? That's my light golf clap for you.
The way I look at it is if it will bear no resemblance to the concepts, there's a chance it won't look stupid. If it does resemble the concepts, then there is no chance it won't look stupid. So at least there is a chance.
I mean, there's always a chance, but based on what I've seen so far that Mr. McGovern has put out, I think it's going to bear an excellent resemblance to the current model lineup.
Well,
it will have a bulbous round front end. It will have a sloping rear, the sport model. There will be a Defender Sport that will have a rear deck that will slope down.
Right, as does most of the body of his prior work.
Exactly. So,
I think it will remind us all of the Ford Explorer, as always.
Right, his claim to fame.
So there we go. I think we already know what it's going to look like.
Yep.
And yes.
So those who want a new Defender, just send me an old Ford Explorer and I'll make it happen for you.
The other interesting thing that I for the first time I saw this in one of the articles that mentioned this, we all know that the Land Rover's moving to this family thing where you have the Range Rover family, you have the Defender, the Discovery family, and then the Defender family. The Defender family is going to be positioned between Range Rover and Discovery. It's not. There was always, I think, some thought that it would be the entry level family. No,
historically,
it's not.
It has been. So apparently, there's a reversal now.
Correct. It's going to be moved. It's going to be moved in between. So the Discovery Sport, and then Discovery, then you'll have your Defender, probably Defender Sport. I'm guessing, just based on what they've done so far, and then you'll move into a Range Rover family. So that's one of the articles. There will be a link in the show notes, of course, to that. But that was a new item I had not seen before referenced.
Yeah, I'd heard rumors of that, so it's interesting to hear we have an article now.
And hopefully we don't have to, go out and purchase a separate soft top version. I don't want to have to get the Defender Sport convertible.
I think there's going that's what's going to have to happen. That's what's going to have to happen. I think that's going to be your soft top. It's going to be probably very much like the Evoque or if you get that.
I got a chop saw. Buy a hard top. I'll fix it.
Well, there will be a what we would consider a 90, a 110. So there'll be a 2-door model. There'll be a 4-door model. There's going to be a pickup model, but apparently the pickup is not going to be available in North America.
Imagine that.
I know, but at least we'll get the 2 and the 4.
At least not for 25 years.
That's true. That's true. And there's a reason to move to Canada. Don't they have 18 years? I think it's 18.
Come to America where you can't get any of the cool stuff.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and things we had mentioned before in this article, I think talked about this last month. He says it's got to produce, they currently make 10,000 Defenders a year. That's got to move up to 100,000 a year. It's got to appeal to a more of a larger audience. And
it's got to be producible by automated means, or at least less manual handwork.
Correct. Oh, yeah. Yeah, having been to the plant and seeing it done, there's no wonder they were limited to its production. Even though they could have expanded to three shifts, they were only doing one shift. It's still very labor-intensive.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how many shifts you have. They're still expensive if you're building them by hand.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. So, well, anyway, so that's what's coming or not coming. There's a new Defender coming. I think it's supposed to be revealed, I'm guessing, later this year. It's just, knowing Land Rover, there'll be a big splash and there'll be a big run-up to it.
Well, I'm sure.
And they're supposed to be released for 2017?
I think it's 2018, which would
2018,
be...
2018, yes.
But wouldn't correct. That... Or is it... No, I think it's 2019. I read the article, but I can't see it immediately right now. I believe it's going to be a 2019 model, so it would come out then in 2018, right? Oh, here we go. The next generation Defenders isn't expected to debut until 2018, likely at the European Auto Show, as a 2019 model. As often has been the case, though, the date is subject to change. Well, that's
of course.
That's the one thing we've been able to count on so far.
Change.
Yes.
All right. Well, at least Brian won't have to change the name of his company. I was trying to bring in Brian. So.
It's easier that way.
Exactly.
At least until JLR decides to have a crackdown on that name.
Yeah.
Hold that. We'll get to that. That's a teaser. Maybe. I hope. Stay tuned. Finally, in the news, just in the celebrity owners, Hammond. Was at the auction. All I could think of was hamster, and I couldn't.
That would have been fine. We know it.
It's true. The hamster was there, so that was good. Along those lines,
doing his hamster dance.
They did not comment on his dancing. Okay. Sean Bean donated his lightweight to a cancer auction. Sean Bean has been in the Lord of the Rings shows and James Bond. That's right. He was a James Bond villain. That's right. In the very first one with Daniel Craig. And he was most recently in Game of Thrones.
All right. Nice.
And so he had a 1973 Series 3 lightweight. And he this football club had asked for something he signed. And they asked him for it. And the lightweight showed up.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you want to see some pictures, we'll have that.
Just give us something. Sure. No
problem. Yeah, sign something for us. Would you mind? Yeah, sure. Here. I think he signed the door, if I'm not mistaken. So,
wow.
Yes. Finally, in our news segment, we have viewer mail. Just because I used to watch David Letterman a lot, and I'll call it viewer mail. But actually, it's a tweet. We got a tweet, and I think we know who this is directed to. So I'll read it. It came from Martin Davies on the Twitter. Quote, love your show, but you have to stop asserting the F-Pace is a rebadged Range Rover Evoque. It's not.
I will be glad.
Response?
I will be glad to stop asserting that when you can prove to me it's not.
Well, maybe we'll get Mr. Davies on the show.
Sure. Show me proof. I'm fine with that.
Well, so what is your proof that it is not a Range Rover, rebadged Range Rover?
That's my question to him. What's your proof that it's not?
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Right. Indeed. Well, what makes you think that it is?
Looking at it.
Oh, okay. I mean, mechanically, is it?
I've not actually turned spanner to one, but okay. Yeah, it's common platform. From what I understand, and looking at it, it obviously looks common platform.
Right. Okay. Well, Mr. Davies, feel free to tweet back at us. Maybe if we need to.
I'd be glad to be wrong, because I'd like to be wrong, but I don't think I am.
Yes. That concludes viewer mail.
All right. Keep them coming. This is good.
Yes, exactly. Speaking of viewer mail, we had our No Restrictions Defender a contest, and we received no entries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's okay. We're going to do it anyways. At the end of the show, we're going to reveal our own No Restrictions.
That should be a standing thing. Whenever somebody decides that they have one, they should send it to us, and we'll mention it.
There we go. Absolutely. And I recently came across some merchandise. It's not hot or stolen. It's just merchandise. It's Land Rover related. And I think we might use that for some contest in the future. My mutual friend of Harold's and I used to work for Land Rover North America and had some neat swag.
Some corporate swag.
And so we'll, I think we'll, I reappropriated some of it, and he was giving it away. And so we might use that for the podcast.
That's right.
So that concludes the news and viewer mail. We'll take a break for the M word. And when we get back, we're going to talk to Brian all the way from Gig Harbor, Washington and Defenders Northwest.
If you've been paying attention to the weather reports, you're likely aware that we're in the midst of some unseasonably warm weather here in western PA. I would say freakishly warm for what is now officially winter. Not that I'm complaining, mind you. I've been doing my best to take full advantage by trying to get caught up on deferred building maintenance and other outdoor work in preparation for the inevitable onslaught of winter. If the nice weather continues, I should be ready for winter by the time spring arrives. Although it's been warm, it's also been quite rainy this past week, which usually saps my motivation, and given the fact that my shop is currently infested by a certain misbehaving disco that I'm not being paid to fix, I decided to hole up at home for a few days, do some reading, and maybe get an early start on my writing for this month's podcast. Well, 2 out of 3 isn't bad. As I sit here writing this, I have less than 3 hours before I have to head out to the studio to record. Nice try. Welcome to another month of frantic writing while anxiously looking over my shoulder at the looming deadline. One of these days, I'll do it early. For quite some time now, I've been wanting to read Graham Bell's book, We Will Be Free, that chronicles the overlanding adventures of the Bell family in their Defender 130. I decided this week's time off for the holidays would be the perfect time to make it happen. If you haven't already done so, I strongly recommend you check out their website, read the blog entries, and look at the lovely pictures. And while you're there, purchase a copy of the book. All sales help fund their ongoing journey, and I can assure you that once you start reading, you won't want to stop. It's remarkably well written, especially so given that the author lacks much of the formal education you typically expect a successful writer to have. I was expecting the book to be an endless string of travel stories describing their many adventures and misadventures as they make their way up the spine of the Western Hemisphere from Argentina to Alaska. It certainly did have plenty of such stories, but I was unexpectedly left with the feeling that these were just the filler material in a much larger essay on cultural differences in global politics. The nomadic lifestyle allowed the author to not just visit strange lands, but to really experience them and to commune with people of many cultures. With a truly global perspective, he interprets these cultures and explains how their landscapes were shaped by early settlers, commercial interests, and short-sighted and sometimes corrupt governments. Before long, I came to the final page and realized the book was finished, but their story is most certainly not over. What perhaps interested me the most was the story of how they became overlanders in the first place. Most people think of overlanders as privileged brats with so much money they don't have to work. They can afford to wander the globe in fancy 4x4 trucks, and when they get bored, they can go home to their large, comfortable homes. This does not describe Graham and Louisa Bell. They both grew up in a working-class South Africa and never achieved anything without lots of hard work. Together, they managed to build a successful business that afforded them a comfortable lifestyle and a large home in an upscale neighborhood. They had all the trappings of success, and yet they felt unfulfilled. The success was trapping them. They were slaves to their business, working so much that they had no time to enjoy what the money had bought them. They needed to break free of their bonds. They realized that overlanding could bring them that freedom and also provide an unbeatable opportunity to teach their two children the value of hard work and self-reliance. So they sold all that they could, packed what they needed, and set out to see the world in their Defender. They have unleashed their passion for living and learning, for sharing food and drink with interesting new people, and for going places where roads aren't necessary. The story of their journey is both thought-provoking and inspirational. I could never do what the Bell family is doing, not because I lack the necessary skills, but simply because I lack the passion. However, I've come to realize over the past decade that my passion is to be an avid supporter of the Land Rover community. This is the reason why an old Land Rover is the best way to see the world. Besides the fact that you're almost never going too fast to enjoy the view, no matter where on the planet you might go, you are never very far from a friend. These are people who will treat you like family and are happy to help however they can to get you what you need to keep you going on your journey. The Land Rover community makes overlanding possible for many good people, even on a modest budget, as long as they have determination and a good tolerance for vehicle maintenance. I salute the Bell family for following their passion and living their dream. I hope your travels bring you to my door someday and that you allow me to build something cool for your truck. I'm also certain the local members of the Land Rover community will provide you plenty of friendship and safe harbor, a chance to rest and recharge until it's time to set sail again to wherever the winds might take you. Have safe travels, my friends, and please keep writing more books.
Welcome back to the Center Steer Podcast, number 33. It is December 2015. The end of 2015, and all the way from Gig Harbor, Washington, on the Skype is Brian from Defenders Northwest. I like saying the in front of things just because it's my reasons. Say hi, Brian.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Much pleasure to have you join us to the show. So Defenders Northwest, what does Defenders Northwest do, and how did Defenders Northwest get its name?
Strangely enough, we are a parts supplier and restoration services for the Land Rover Defender exclusively.
I would not have gotten that from your name.
Well, we're also quite often confused with public defenders in the state of Washington. That would be Northwest Defenders, their great law group who hasn't sued us yet.
Well, those who own vintage defenders sometimes are in need of a public defender. So,
in fact, several of our customers are defenders. Public or private, and they drive defenders, which
Excellent. Makes
it easy.
I'm all confused, though, now. Let's wait. Is it public defenders who drive defenders in the Northwest? Northwest public defenders who drive defenders in the Northwest.
Yes.
Thanks to Defenders Northwest.
And thanks to the defender of defenders.
Yeah.
He's not in the Northwest.
No, he's not.
So how did you get into Land Rovers?
I was looking for a platform that would give me 1,000+ miles of range to go pick my sorry butt up when I dumped a rally motorcycle while training in the Southwest. And the Defender in the rest of the world was always that truck.
Really?
So a simple, stock, easily modified shell that that would solve that problem. So I had resigned myself to never having such a beast, seeing as the NAS trucks being all petrol-based didn't have the range. And I ran into a gentleman from Julian Cotting at a show in Southern California who had a really beautiful TD5-powered 110 that was clearly not a NAS truck, and he enlightened me as to the existence of the 25-year rule. And I was...
And his violation thereof?
Especially at that point in time, because we're talking more than a few years ago.
Yeah.
But
that's before the
early
called
excited
Defenders.
Possibility of what that meant for bringing functional trucks into the country that could accomplish what I was after.
Yeah, because most people don't choose a Land Rover for the fuel mileage. That's an interesting.
Well, and it's about range on rough surface, and
true.
Frankly, there's not much better for it.
That's good to hear. Had you what other vehicles did you make? Did you consider? Did you actually test any or purchase any?
Well, there wasn't. Without excessive modification or just carrying a ton of jerry cans, there really wasn't anything that would do it.
Yeah.
And part of that was the small diesel on a small platform on a narrow truck, and really the Lego side of it that says that you can make the truck into just about anything you need using stock parts.
Indeed.
And anywhere you go, there'll be someone there to help you fix it.
And anywhere you go, you'll need somebody to help you fix it.
And in comes Brian up in the Northwest is now a fixer.
Yep.
I am my own worst customer, and that's how the business started.
How big is the business now? Like, I to take it from you, you're very heavily used on Facebook and on Instagram, and you have a nice website. Is it just you?
Well, no, we've got full-time myself and my wife. My wife runs the office, and then I've got 3 part-time gentlemen with specialty services, each of them that help as we need to. We've had a couple other people float through over the last 3 years, but we were only started in 2012, so we're still getting off the ground.
Gotcha. You have a nice shop. Did you build your own shop, or did you looks like you're in a larger space, you know, and then there's several shops there, it seems, based on the pictures I've seen. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah. We're in a commercial complex with a few other shops around us. Nobody affiliated, but some fantastic folks who also we've borrowed services from. In fact, we've got a local molding plastics company that's managed to make a few bits for us that's in the same complex.
Cool.
I have to ask, because this is the one thing that I like. Who takes the photographs? Because the Instagram pictures are pretty kick-ass.
That's me.
That's you. Great job.
Thank you. I my background is graphic design and visual communications.
Uh-huh.
With a side of business and about a dozen years working for a major tool company that led me to this strange and fantastic hobby/company.
That's a good combination of skills.
Yeah.
It works well.
I do really enjoy your pictures. If our listeners are not following you on Instagram, they really should, because I think you do take some really nice photographs. I know you travel a good bit, and they're always nicely staged photos. And I stay staged in the nicest way. Not, you know, there's a lot of people who just like, there's my Defender, and there's a sky, click, and they're in it. No. Yours are, you know, you position, well, you balance the photograph, you crop it and balance it well. So
you're saying staged as opposed to saying posed.
Okay, sure. We'll go with that. We'll go with that. Brian, you're right with that?
Those are correct. I'd say they're framed well, but that's
framed.
The real deal. That's what we're doing, and we're out there. Mm-hmm. At the events, and we're out there running the runs, and part of our program is to get out with the customers and play as much as we can, and it makes it easy to take great pictures.
Now, I understand you were instrumental in the gathering of Defenders. It was in Oregon back in October.
Yes, the Defender RVP, as it's become called, was a collaboration between myself and Carl Johnson from Tiktaalik, And this is originally was set up to be a one-time event, but before we got halfway through, every single person at the event had asked what we're doing next year. So we're working on making this reoccurring.
What is RVP?
It is the French military term for a rendezvous point. And about the extent of the event. Participants pay their small fee to pay for the logistics, permits, etc. And in return, they get a set of coordinates and a time and a date. There's not much more provided.
Cool.
Seriously.
So tell us more. What? Wait a minute. This sounds really cool. How many trucks did you have this this time? Or the first time?
First event was 30-some-odd people, 16 vehicles from as far as California, most of Oregon, and Washington State. In addition to the Bell family from A to A Expeditions,
our friends of the podcast.
Never heard of them. Who are they?
Troublemakers.
They are troublemakers. A lot of them, yes.
If you talk to them, you'll never forget it. That's for sure.
I have to pause the podcast to tell you that I received a Christmas greeting on Facebook verbally. Graham and Louisa sang to me, and they. It was wonderful. It was a great.
Maybe
greeting.
You might want to forget that one.
No, let's play it now. I wanted to find out how I could play it.
To our show notes.
I need to find out. I tried to export it from Facebook. I don't know if it was possible. I need to see if I can do it. I will.
Cool little Easter egg to put on the show notes.
It would. RVP Rendezvous Point event. They had 30 trucks the first time. How many times has this event occurred?
This was the first win, and an inaugural event was this year. So we are we're in the throes of trying to plan the 2016 and 2017 event. And what it's become is an opportunity to tick off your adventure checklist. So the first year was really about out driving on a playa. And if you haven't driven across a giant dry lake bed, it is like nothing else and is something everybody should get to tick off their list. So for next year, we're looking at some air support, i.e. a little bit of seat time in a flight to go route scouting for each of the participants. And for 2017 or 2018, we've done a little bit of scouting and are potentially going to be using landing crafts and driving up a beach. So we're
wait. Let's pause. Hold on. You're saying then that the event would encourage and require folks in their own vehicle to make a beach assault, a beach
Correct.
Landing
on an island in the Pacific Northwest.
No doubt. Interesting. So what? So they would have time to build this? Like you would give them several months, or is this? Hey, there's going to be a beach landing. Be prepared.
Yeah, that's about the size of it.
Okay.
Well, now that it's been on our podcast, they know it might be coming.
It's an exclusive to the podcast. It's been revealed.
So you have time to build your amphibious rover now.
Yes. Yes. Well, I know who can build it for you, right? I think they're out in Washington. Yeah.
Fortunately, there all are landing craft available for us to rent during the summers up here that'll take us out to the island.
Well, that takes the sport out of it.
Do you get bonus points if you build your own?
Yes. Absolutely.
And bonus points if it actually makes it.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, I think you'd probably win the event
it
at
doesn't
that point.
Sink.
Yeah. If you're the only one who drove there versus floated there, you automatically win the prize.
Whatever that might be.
Probably just adulation and pats
Some
on the back.
Three drain holes in your hull, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, there
you
go. Yeah.
So
wax oil.
So all it is a GPS coordinate. That's what you get?
That's what you get. You get a date and a coordinate. The event is really just a loosely organized base camp in a location that is both photogenic and adventurous. So we encourage you to get out and do day trips to take your fellow attendees with you. The group size can and will always be limited so that it's intimate and just plain fun.
Guaranteed to be private with detailed distribution like that.
Well, that's it. And it's supposed to be memorable. We've got some of the participants from the first year whose day jobs include suits and lots of memos and meetings, and they get to to check off something adventurous and fun for their weekend. That's not like much else.
So how long does it take? So this is you have like 3 days, or what is the timing?
Yep. So we're trying to always arrange this around a long weekend to give people as much time as possible. The sort of self-imposed rules say that it needs to be at least 1 day's travel from either Portland or Seattle, but no more than 2 days' travels, and encourage people to take 2 or 3 days on either end to explore the route on their way to and from, and make their own epic adventure out of it.
And then when they arrive at the LZ, I assume there's a big party.
That's about it. Yeah. All sorts of fantastic scotch gets broken out from different people's cabinets, and coffee is provided by somebody, and there's shared meals and a bonfire, and it's all good folks doing good stuff.
Yeah. There's some looks like wonderful national parks out that way, I assume. Are those utilized?
The challenge of national parks and group gatherings, especially with vehicles, don't pair well. So we are looking for private land or USFS, Forest Service, or state land to work in.
Nice. And where do people find more information about this? Is that you have to be part of the club?
If you don't know, you don't know.
First rule about the RVP event is you don't ask. You don't talk about the RVP event.
If you don't know, then you don't. They don't need to know.
It is Defender only, and it is by invitation only. And as we get a little closer and firm up, we will make announcements again. And prior event attendees get priority.
Now, do you have the strict interpretation of the word defender, or do you take the corporate line?
And by defender, I mean coil sprung, manufactured either as a 90 or a 110 prior to the defender name.
No leaves allowed, huh?
No leaves.
Well then, it sounds like I need to get my all the more reason to get my 110 on the battlefield here. Yeah. So
we do have a point of contention. We've got a customer with a Series 2A hybrid project, and it's a Defender underneath and a 2A on the top, and we're not sure how to handle that one.
You've stumped the podcast. Yeah, that's true.
You're going to be that up nosed about it, huh?
We don't know what it is. So we're not sure.
How's it titled? As a 2A?
That's a good question. I'll have to ask him.
So you're saying mechanically it's a Defender underneath, but a 2A body on top?
Correct. 200 TDI powered coil sprung chassis.
Well, it's coil.
Well, mechanically it's Defender.
Yes.
But it doesn't look like a Defender. So how do you know it's a Defender?
Okay.
Put on the long glove and do the examination.
There we go. Yes.
Could always ask the federal government. They know what constitutes.
Logically. Wow, that's pretty cool. I didn't even know there was so invitation only RVP. All right. Well,
wow, that's pretty serious.
Nice. Yes. Okay. Well, there we go. So you've been doing Defenders Northwest for 3 years now, and you said you got into it because you were you're a motorcycle rider. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And are you still a motorcycle rider?
Less so, partly because I'm in Washington State at the moment, and it is cold, wet, and almost snowy.
Are you from Washington?
No, I'm Hawaiian born and Southern California raised. So
okay.
Right. This was never my first choice, but it's grown on me, and spent a couple years here in high school and college. And what I discovered is that if you have a lot of flexibility in your schedule, Washington's a fantastic place to live, because right about February you just need to get out for a few weeks and see sunshine, and the rest of the year is quite tolerable.
It's like living in Pittsburgh. Yeah.
That lack of sunshine is a little more than just February, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and we also get my understanding is we get more rain here than Seattle. It's just
entirely possible. Yeah. We get this strange sort of gray drizzle that lasts for about 2 months, and I think they've got more words for the different kinds of rains than Eskimos do for snow.
Well, although I understand you've been getting more snow than we have here.
Quite possible. We're much cooler. In fact, I'm looking out the window and watching the snowflakes fall now.
Well, if you had snow, then you had more than we had.
Yeah.
That's true. It's true. So what else does Defenders Northwest do besides sponsor this event? I assume you're a sponsor.
We are.
And so what other things do you get into?
We're a strange three businesses in one. West Coast parts supplying for the Defenders. We try and keep as much in stock as possible for the 300 TDI motors and then some of the periphery with the 200s and the TD5s. Part of that is to support our local communities, and part of that is for our charter, which says that we are charged with providing room for service and support to overland travelers. Where we're positioned, we do catch a lot of folks on their way to or from Alaska, as this is one of their stops. Additionally, we do restoration work, but I prefer not to do it for people. I prefer to do it with people, and as such, we've got a program set up to do so. That's our owner-managed restoration program, and the way this thing works is that you come in, you tell us what you would like to do with your Defender, meaning at the end of the day, what you want it to do, and then we talk about how to best get you there, and if at all possible, we get you to do as much of that work as you are capable of, both on a time and a capacity standpoint. To that end, in fact, our hourly rate is discounted by 50% for folks who come in and do the work themselves, because we want to encourage that. So our owners are more about, when I get a phone call from something broken from a restoration owner, they know what they've broken and they know what they need to do to fix it, as right. opposed to the, you know, inevitable, something doesn't work, come fix me
right.
call that we get when we do a full restoration
it's
for someone.
Making a funny noise. What do I do?
Now, does that include them actually working in your shop?
It does indeed. So, in fact, we are set up and insured as a school.
Nice.
Which was a bit of a challenge for the first year trying to figure out, because insurance companies thought we were insane.
yeah, I certainly do.
Well, there's that, but you know, it's earned.
Thankfully, Harold's not an insurance company.
No, but I've dealt with enough of them to understand the headaches he's had to deal with.
Yeah. What we... the model I looked at was the larger chains that do cooking schools within their stores, and they're teaching people to work with sharp steel, hot items, and potentially poisonous goods.
Right.
And how do they get around, getting an insurance company to understand that? And the school model is well understood by the insurance companies.
Interesting. I may have to chat with you off show about this more. I like this.
This is something I've been considering a while too.
We're trying to figure out how to do it remotely. That's been the challenge. So, to that end, we've only had local customers, but we've been getting requests from far afield and are working on solutions to be able to help people without bringing people in permanently.
That's a great
thought
idea.
About maybe a satellite campus in Western PA.
Franchise. Seriously, because I could be a customer. I'd be the perfect customer for that part of it.
Potentially.
Exactly. Yeah, I'd like to learn how to work on
myself. I
think
we might need to give you a couple classes first.
That's what it's there for.
That's what we're here for.
That's exactly what it's there for, yes.
Well, we usually get the customer who says, I can't do it. I've never done it. I know nothing about cars.
Mm-hmm.
And typically the response is, can you ask a question before you get out the bigger hammer? Have you ever put together a toy model and... do you like games? And if the answer is yes to all three of those, you're more than capable and we can help you do it.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. How many vehicles have gone through that, or how many customers have you had? It seems like...
I'm trying to think. That's a good question.
Or how often? Do you have like one a month? Do you take one on at a time? Or do you have several going on?
It varies. Some projects. We did a 1984-90, so that was a first year full restoration to a late 300 TDI spec, and the owner's son did the work, and that took him working weekends only the better part of a year. And he was not our only client for the whole year.
That's good.
So we both have large projects and smaller projects. So I'd say we've had this year's been seeing a bit of growth. So we've had 15 or 16 trucks through this year, ranging from small projects to a couple full restorations.
Nice. Yeah. Based on the pictures, again, Instagram, I see you moving a lot of trucks around and taking pictures of this, and two or three trucks in the background. So, yeah, yes, which is as I salivate over what I see. Yes, so that sounds really cool. That's
I like the idea of what you're doing.
Well, thank you. It's about use. I mean, the hard part is, and we've had this discussion with customers who are serious Land Rover fans, is that I see these as tools. You know, and a hammer that you hang on the wall is just art, but a hammer you hit the nail with is a tool, and these are meant to be used. So we want to teach people that they're not precious and that they shouldn't be afraid of breaking it because they can fix it.
Not only do you have this school program, owner managed restoration, I think is the official term.
That is correct.
You also sell trucks, because I see trucks for sale on your site.
We do not, in the sense that we're not a car dealership. We will we'll help some folks via consignment. Mm-hmm. When there's trucks that are available, we're able to get them out and get a little more connection for that customer who's selling. But for the most part, we prefer the owner to own their vehicle. In fact, for the restoration programs, we don't do restorations till vehicles are owned, licensed, registered, titled, and clearly condoned as vehicles by the state and the U.S. government.
That makes things a lot cleaner.
It does. It's just risk management.
Right.
So there's two currently for sale. Those are not actually yours, at least when I looked at the website. So those are your customers, and you're just a kind of reseller.
Correct, although one of them may be mine.
So our listeners obviously cannot see you as we can. Behind you is that the one that's for sale? There's one. You're sitting in front of a Defender, white. Looks like a 130, maybe.
Nope, that's a 90.
It's a 90. Okay.
At 130, we have another door.
Well, I was thinking. I thought maybe it was a whole truck bed though.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
No. What you can't see are the three other trucks sitting in the shop. In various stages of repair. No, this is a project behind us that's a customer project, and a local customer as well, fortunately. So he's on the slow track. But the for sale vehicles are stored in our offsite warehouse. And then we also have customer projects that are waiting out front, getting rained on until they can wait their turn to come inside and get work done.
So do you have the 110 or the 130?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you're referring to the for sale trucks.
Yes.
In the for sale trucks, the 130 is our shop truck.
Nice.
And it is perpetually for sale only so that I can then build a more shop-specific shop truck.
What would the shop-specific truck be like?
Actually, it would probably be a 157 double cab drop side so that we can load some pallets on the back.
I like it.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice.
Good call.
I think you get the thumbs up all around.
And would it actually be 157 or would it be 154?
Since
130 isn't actually 130.
I know. I think at that point you're on a custom frame with a custom rear prop shaft, so you could probably make it just about anything you like.
Well, you can always make whatever you want.
That's the beauty of the platform.
Yep. You know, the right parts and a plasma cutter and a MIG welder, and you got whatever you want.
That's it.
So what do you – so you think of the Defender as a tool? How do you use it as a tool?
Absolutely. I mean – our Instagram's a perfect example. We get out and play with it. So I've got two trucks at the moment. The 110, which is set up as a big blue backpack, and that's how we refer to it. It's roof tent and refrigerator, and it's our road trip and camping truck, and that's how we use it. And then the 130 is the daily driver and shop truck for the most part, and it's really put to work. Everything from trade shows to hauling cut up scrap frames to go get sold for scrap metal to, you know, picking up orders and delivering parts. So they're, they don't like to sit. They like to get put to work, and we do our best to do that.
They do important things for important people.
Always.
Somewhere.
Someone. We like the Top Gear. What can we say?
We have a terrible business model. And And it works.
Some of the best businesses do.
And it only works because I love doing it. And if I didn't, it would be god-awful. But I really do love doing it. And the people who come in to do the work love being here. So it makes it really easy.
So tell us more about the how that got started. Was that your idea? Did someone else come up with the idea? Or
so that was me. And part of that was finishing I'd finished one of my own restorations and realized just the massive amount of hours involved to do so. And when you look at a restoration from another shop where they do it for you, the majority of that cost is labor. And the only really
sure it is.
Good solution for that is to hire lower cost, less skilled labor. And when you do that, you don't get the care and the attention necessary to refurbish parts because there's no investment in the end result. They're invested in what you're paying them per hour. And to make a restoration affordable, you can't pay them much per hour.
Right.
But an owner is well invested in the end result. And
right, he's the only one that's going to work for nothing and still care what he's doing.
Right. And he's not working for nothing in the sense that the trade-off is knowledge.
And sweat equity.
Well, absolutely. And they get that out of it. They get their own value within there. Some customers want to learn it because they want to know it. And some customers want to save a few pennies. And some customers just don't have a dry place to work out here. And so, you know, shop space where you can work, and we've got a big old tool board full of loaner tools, and there's usually at least one or two other employees or customers or combination thereof doing work in the shop, which means you can always get a hand or ask a question. It's built a community, and it's just good stuff all the way around.
How do you manage the safety aspect of it?
So we teach people to work using the simplest of tools, the ones that you are most likely to have on the truck or at home,
right,
where at all possible. And to that end, when there's an opportunity for risk, the customer, especially the unskilled customer, is not working alone. They're very much billing hands-on support hours at that point in time.
Okay.
So we've got a customer who just finished up an engine transmission assembly that's going to go into his truck here in the next couple of weeks. And during his on-site time, it was hands-on, simply because the cost and risk from a safety perspective of him doing something severely wrong to an engine can be pretty high. But his homework involved taking dirty, greasy, nasty old inert parts home and a wire brush and some cleaner and spending time at home cleaning. So low risk, low injury potential with a wire brush. I mean, I suppose you could do some terrible things if you're not cautious, but certainly something that we'd like to think that the owners are capable of doing on their own.
Do you require them to carry some sort of accident insurance?
No, so that is how we are insured. The vehicle itself they're working on is required to be insured as it comes in.
Okay.
But our business insurance covers our students in process.
Okay.
So to that end, we don't have a pit. We don't have a lift. We don't have very large, very dangerous tools in place where somebody could accidentally hurt themselves. And so people are pretty well supervised, and like I said, if they have the personality type where they ask before grabbing a bigger hammer, they're more likely to do so than to injure themselves out of ignorance.
Interesting. And do you have a mechanism in place where if there is an incident, you can ask them not to come back, or how do you handle something like that?
Yes, and unfortunately, we haven't had to.
Well, hopefully, you don't. But just curious if you have a system in place.
Find some wood. Yeah, so the way the program typically works is when you come in, you spend far more time hands-on during the initial phase.
Okay.
And as we assess your skill set and your personality type, then that's going to determine how much hands-off time you're able to do while in the shop.
Sort of like a certification of sorts then.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so there are customers who've never touched a wrench before, and their labor rate is much higher for the first month because we're spending a lot of time with basic mechanics skills development. And okay. there are some folks who have restored everything from Corvettes to Volkswagens who just don't have the Defender-specific knowledge, and their ramp-up time is much smaller.
Sure, yeah. Now, are you required to have any sort of certifications, like teacher certificates?
No, because this doesn't really exist anywhere. We're not accredited. You're not okay. going to get college credits for working on your Defender.
Right. I just didn't know if the insurance company required it, that the instructors, so to speak, are certified somehow.
Yeah, they did not. They, huh. I think this baffled them already enough as it is.
It baffles me, but I like it.
We're not normal in the sense that we're not one business doing one thing the way everybody else does. So it does kind of blow people's mind the first time we talk about it.
Is that because of where you're located? I hate to generalize folks, but it seems like that part of the country is would lend itself to that kind of community and that kind of endeavor.
I don't know that it is. Part of it is our customer base is – our local customer base is relatively small still. The Defenders only really worked its way to the West Coast in any volumes in the last few years because it seems like historically it's a military area with most of the military service being in the Pacific. So there's not a lot of exposure to the Defender like the military folks who see time in Europe. So there isn't that sort of long set affinity for the product or the brand that you see on the East Coast. It's just a smaller group of people. They're just as passionate, if not more so, some of them than the East Coast folks, but it's just not, it's not a volume.
Well,
so
theoretically, they have to land here first and work their way across the country.
That's it. Well, we do ship, fortunately for us, and one of the reasons why this business works is that the Port of Tacoma is one of two roll-on, roll-off ports on the West Coast. So if a vehicle is coming to the West Coast, it's either coming into Southern California or it's coming into Tacoma, which is a whopping 12 miles from us. So that helps tremendously.
And it's got to be a lot more friendly to deal with than the Port of Long Beach.
Yes. Just a wee bit.
Yeah. Not just distance-wise, just size-wise. It's got to be a much friendlier place.
It is, and it's the volume is good. It's right on par with Seattle. Seattle-Tacoma ports are some of the busiest on the West Coast, but they're equally balanced for import and export. So what we see when I go over to the port is about every roll-on ship that comes in has at least a dozen to 15 Defenders come into the States, and a third of those are going to Canada, a third of them are overlanders, and a third of them are for the U.S.,
so
maybe
you,
a third of those get sent back.
So you get ro-ro service as well as container there?
Correct.
Excellent.
So to that end, we're a licensed and bonded importer, and we've done import services for folks to the West Coast, local customers, as well as some Canadian customers.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Having imported two myself into the Port of Baltimore, yes. Yes, that's a nice feature.
And I suspect what you pay to do that is about double to ship it to him. It's a long boat ride to Washington.
It is a long boat ride. Yeah,
through the Panama Canal.
Yes, yeah, they're all through the canal, and the canal tax is not light. So we're probably $2,000 more per vehicle to the West Coast for ro-ro service.
Wow.
Yeah, so it is about double what we pay to ship one.
Yeah,
yep.
but if you think about it, if it were to come into Baltimore or the East Coast somewhere, then to ship it across the country, it'd probably be about the same anyways.
Right, sure.
Yeah, and then you'd probably have, if you're on the West Coast, you got more to deal with being on the other side of the continent.
No argument there. It just, you know, it's one advantage we have over them is that we're that much closer to the homeland.
Right, yes.
The big advantage is time. A container of goods for me takes close to 30 days. versus a week and a half.
Yeah. Right.
Right, or 3 days if you can get them air freighted.
Yeah. Once you're on an airplane, it doesn't really matter.
Indeed. Indeed. So Defenders, you exclusively handle Defenders. It's in the name.
It is in the name.
And why is that? Don't you
with a couple exceptions. We have one series customer and we have one disco customer. Mostly to remind myself that I don't like working on series or disco vehicles.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that philosophy, definitely.
And why do you say that? What's your thinking there?
So I come to the Defender from a very pragmatic, low tool, low skill threshold to work on, and the ability to take off and replace body panels without having to be skilled in body work, and the ability to access the innards of the truck with just a few pieces bodes well for the Defender, and is not so simple on things like the Classic or the Disco. And conversely, the proliferation of parts, there's really not much that's in LA or no longer available parts wise on the Defender. So it is, you know, it's not a scenario where you're waiting or spending a tremendous amount of time searching out the right part that is in somebody's new old stock in the middle of the desert somewhere that you hope to get before the next guy does, as the series have become collectibles. And that's only going to get more challenging.
Of course, a Disco can be an excellent source of used parts to keep a Defender going.
Absolutely. And for the right price, we've seen a few of them come through here as parts leave as parts.
That's an excellent use of a Disco, by the way. Not that I hate Discos. I like them. But, you know, the more I work on, especially the Disco 2s, the more I work on them, the more I realize I would rather work on a Defender.
It's just, yeah, it's a matter of enjoyment. And the Defender is really just fun to work on because it doesn't have nearly as many contortions necessary to do basic operations.
And so much more of it can be taken out of the way to get to other stuff.
Correct.
You want to work on the engine, just take the whole front end off. It's no problem.
Well, the really nice part is at some point, if you damage a body panel or something is rotted or rusted out, it's just easier to replace it. And it doesn't require any special training, just a few hand tools and usually some patience in solving the puzzle on how to get that part out.
Well, actually, that's the beauty of working on ex-military Defenders. You damage a body panel, who's going to know?
We got a few customers who are exactly like that. In fact, we get chastised sometimes for taking patina away when we clean up an old truck.
You can make it look too nice.
As long as they go use it, it's not too nice.
There you go.
So, do you are you a Land Rover fan now? Is this are you a fanboy?
I am not. To that end, I
heretic.
Really... Oh yeah, you like the guy. Now he's a heretic. Oh, maybe that's a show title. Now he's a heretic.
My position on it is a bit strange, and I've had this discussion with a few customers who are very much Land Rover fans. In fact, we got a local customer who has a dealership sign that we helped him hang up in his garage, and he uses that to light his garage this Christmas, only because his wife wouldn't let him put it on the roof. And, but no, I don't really care who made the truck. And to that end, Land Rover did. So by default, I guess I am a little bit of a Land Rover fan, but I don't have much love for the brand. I just like the product. And if Toyota had made it or Ford had made it or somebody else had made it, then that would have been who I'd be buying parts from. But the reality is a vehicle that you can take apart and rebuild down to the engine using a block and tackle and a strong tree, nobody else makes it. And so it is this truck that is still daily drivable in North America. And that's sort of what precludes the series, is that they've become collectibles and the parts are getting more and more difficult to come by. And so therefore it's harder to go out and use and abuse them.
You know,
if
only somebody would come up with a website where you could find parts for series trucks.
Who would want to do that?
It's a lot of time and effort for what do you get out of it, huh?
I hear it might pay well.
And then, except when a website goes down on a Saturday night and you spend all evening trying to get it back up again, right?
Yeah.
I saw you had a recent problem.
So it takes as much maintenance as the products it's there to support.
Easily.
Yeah, but does the website leak?
Data.
Not yet.
Sorry.
Memory leaks?
Sorry, information security joke. We don't get many of them. So you're completely understandable, and I like the way you explain that you're basically a Defender fan. You're not necessarily a Land Rover fan, and that's completely
and that's okay. It's, yeah. You're still a fan of the Defender. It's just maybe not the brand behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with the brand behind it, but brands are brands.
Right.
And
that's not why you're there, and that's fine.
Yeah.
So I
and sadly they don't. You know, Land Rover North America and the Defender are a bit of a love-hate relationship, and it makes it challenging for those of us who love the Defender to hear Land Rover North America pretend that the Defender doesn't exist until they need it for advertising.
Right.
And, you know, we're more about the end user and less about how it got to their hands.
Okay, I could see that.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, in their, I don't say defense, but I think I see their position that why talk about something that's not available and it only causes additional concern and angst amongst the customers.
Of course, my response would be just make it available.
Well, and they are. They're going to do that in 2019.
They're going to make something available.
Yeah, it's not going to be our Defender.
No.
Well, he just said make it available, and they are going to make it available, but it may not be what you want, but it's going to be available. Because
only
they can't.
We know what we want.
You can't have it now. You got to wait 25 years.
You can have it. You can build it. We can help.
And there we go. You can turn to Defenders Northwest. So what's going to happen with your name? Do you think when they go to the new Defender, is that going to cause you any consternation or concern with your name?
I hope not.
Yeah.
Fingers are crossed.
Can I ask if you've been has Land Rover North America come at you because of the name?
No, we have not seen the dreaded cease and desist. So we are...
All right, we'll keep it trying to fly under the radar. Yeah,
too late for that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they already know about you.
Yeah, because they listen to our podcast.
I don't know. Do they?
I'm sure they surveil us. Why not? Why wouldn't they?
I don't know. I'm sure somebody listens to us. That
well,
then
I'm
reports
told one
back
or two
to
people
them.
Do listen to our show once in a while.
We have a couple customers. A couple listeners. I know that.
And one of them apparently writes us a letter.
Email. Tweet. We got a tweet. So what's coming up? What's next for Defenders Northwest? You are out and about at different events. What's coming up in 2016?
Well, we have a strange cycle, and it's mostly built around Northwest weather. And when it's nice out, we go play. And that's late summer, Indian summers for us. And the rest of the time, we try and get the work done for all the people we tell to wait until it starts raining. And now that it starts raining, we're at work. So yeah. At the moment, we've got a backlog of projects through the end of April to get us into the beginning of the year, and we will be most likely down at Overland Expo in Arizona again this year. I think this is our fourth year attending, fourth year showing. They add up. Plus the local overlanding shows and a few other pieces. And then our Defender RVP for 2016 will be announced most likely right around Expo in May.
To a select few, invitation only.
To a select few. Well, we'll announce it prior to those who attended this year.
I see.
And the open slots will be provided out for next year to a few folks who might be interested in doing so.
Do you still go out and use your motorcycle? Do you, or has that is that hobby kind of taken away, gone to the wayside a little bit?
I find that I have not nearly enough time, so I've sold my rally bikes, kept one dual sport, which I do ride occasionally. The the abrupt change in that hobby. I was training to run the Dakar Rally as an independent and was doing a training ride with a partner. We were doing from Canada to Mexico along the Pacific Crest via dirt roads as a training. And a couple days in, I had a full-size mule deer jump out of the woods and snap my arm, break my ribs, and send me via helicopter Yikes. To a hospital in Reno.
Yeah, that'll slow you down.
So that slowed me down, and as a result, I ride. I don't race. Can't ride all day any longer, but I do get out and play every once in a while when I can.
Well, that's good. At least you're back on the bike, right?
Yes, fully functional, and everything works. And I have a zipper down the back of my arm I can't see, so I don't remember all the time.
Well, at least you're not having constant pain to remind you.
That's it. No, very fortunate.
Yeah.
And you're still able to do your job.
Yep.
Good for you.
Indeed.
So you teased it. You met our friends. You've actually met them in person. Graham and Louisa. We got to talk about them.
Yes.
So they you met them, what, twice now?
Three times.
Three times. Okay. Did you assist them, help them out with their Defender?
We did. So our charter has us, you know, as a requirement to offer assistance to active overlanders passing through the Northwest.
I think they qualify for that description.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And we've had, I think, six or seven overlanders take us up on that. All of them driving Defenders with the exception of one. And
So what does it mean to render assistance, like shop time or expertise?
Yep, a space to work, tools, you know, a dry, warm space to work, depending on what time of year they're coming through. Put a few of them up and become friends, lifelong friends with a couple of them as well. In fact, the Bell family, on one of their trips through, happened to coincide with my son's birthday party. So they came out for the birthday party and had a fantastic time.
Had to have spiced the party up a little bit.
Just a little bit. Some very interesting conversations, that's for sure.
Did you have a bray?
We did not. They've chastised me a million times for not inviting them over for a proper bray.
Yeah, bray. It's bray. I got it wrong.
Butcher of names rides again.
Well, butcher of words that are not mine.
But my young son has a crush on their daughter.
He can now publicly be publicly revealed.
No surprise there.
Oh yeah, he's
she is a tamer of all animals, as I understand.
She's a sweetheart, and she's, I think, 3 years older than him. And in fact, this Christmas we were invited to go visit them in Mexico for Christmas, and unfortunately, work kept us here instead. He let me know that he would be willing to give up all the large Christmas presents if he could spend Christmas with Jessica again. So,
wow.
Always a negotiator. Only the large ones, mind you.
Only the large ones. Well, she clearly made an impression.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, very cool. They tell me they'll get around to Pennsylvania, and we'll get to meet them also. Then we'll see how that goes.
Unlike some of the travelers, they actually make pretty good time, so they may actually make it to Pennsylvania before we forget who they are.
Or they might just change their mind and about West Virginia and head to Mexico again.
Most likely.
I think that technique landed them in Brazil about three times.
Yes. Yeah. That's the overlanders we get along best with are the ones who have a plan and manage to not follow it.
Yeah.
And the stories, the adventures, and their pace and patience are much better than the ones who are on a tight timeline.
So what kind of people do come through the Overlanders besides the Bell family? Often seems like more of a individuals or
normal couples. Is a very ambiguous term.
Yeah. Normal in this abnormality. The average overlander, if there is such a thing, it's usually a couple traveling. Very few solo folks in the overland vehicle sense and even less families. We had one gentleman who in his late 60s was stealth overlanding, and that he didn't blog and didn't tell anybody about it. He just did it and has been doing it for the last 6 years. It's a French gentleman that we helped out in storing his Toyota, mostly because we import-export, and he needed that help, and because I speak French and nobody else was able to help him there. But outside of that, the Overland Birds, Neil Bird came through fantastic, but they were clearly on a timeline. So we spent very little time with them. Ben Davenport from Cape Horn or Cornwall to Cape Horn, has been through probably half a dozen times. Actually went and picked him up in Whitehorse, and we did some time in Alaska together, and he's currently in Mexico. So it took him about 2.5 years to get from us to Mexico. But the stories are fantastic, and
well, that's what sort of landing's about, isn't it? It's more the journey than it is the destination.
I understand then that you'll render assistance to any overlander, not just an overlander and a defender?
That's correct. The defender guys get priority.
As they should.
Partly because we have parts available.
Well, yeah, you're equipped to deal with them. Yeah, sure.
Right. And knowledge and parts. Our specialty is 300 TDI with some dabblings on either side of that in the 200 and the TD5. So we've got a good part supply to help them, and they're more contemporary vehicles than most of the imports that have terrible motors and need lots of help.
Okay.
Brian, you've started this the kind of tech school for folks, and it sounds like we're about ready to move it over here to the East Coast from what I can already see Harold's wheels turning.
It's an idea I've been playing with for a while, so I like hearing how you're doing it, and I would like to maybe talk to you some more about how I could make that happen here.
Be great.
Because he's going to need
more folks.
The only problem is he's going to need help with the Series 3. The transmission is giving me issues again.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, I think maybe I'm just closing the doors. Just skip what I said. Just close the doors. I'm going to quit.
Click. So, I got it back, and I drove it down to the brewery, and it was okay, generally okay. Took it down to the brewery a second time, so I've only driven it like twice, maybe three times since I got it back. I have to double clutch to get into third and fourth in particular, and sometimes into second or first. First is real tough to get into at times, especially when I'm under power, like rolling, even not rolling, sorry, now that I think of it. And I had problems getting in and out of overdrive. There's a little bit of grinding at one point, and granted, I'm under speed, so I'm not trying to force it, but pull it back and then try again. So there was general stickiness. There is double clutching. What else do you want to know?
I think Brian would suggest you move back to the Defender.
I would. Yeah. Yeah, maybe we should devote all efforts to the 110. Yeah, and just it'd be nice to have the 109.
How is it for starting out?
It's okay. I consider it stiff to get it into first gear. Like you have to lean on it just a bit. It's not. Sometimes it won't even go into first. I'll put into another gear and then try to get back into
first.
That
kind of sounds more like the clutch is not disengaging fully than anything else.
Mm.
Yeah, I was going to guess hydraulics. I had similar problems with mine when I decided I had to rebuild the hydraulics.
Yeah, that sounds more like a clutch problem if it's uniformly across all gears, not shifting smoothly at all.
Okay. Something new.
Does it do that at all temperatures?
That's a good question, because I thought of that. It seemed... When it was warmer days, it seemed less of an issue. When it was the last time I took it out, it was it was colder than we'd had it in a while.
Yeah.
And it seemed to be worse. Like, it was more sticky. It was harder to shift. It was, and it was, you know, I had a couple grindings a couple times because I, you know, you push the clutch in and even put it into gear and it's still grounded. Maybe that supports
that
your.
Sounds like more like clutch. Well, what's it do when it's not running? Just row the box.
Honestly, I parked it and I, you know, was, you know,
well,
with something we can maybe check later.
I'll take a look at it.
Yeah. So,
I'm all in favor of something that doesn't require removing the gearbox, and that's why I'm thinking it's clutch.
We're hoping it's clutch. As listeners to the podcast know and have listened to your, I think, your last M word, or was the M word before?
Previous one.
Yes, that we're on clutch.
My woes of transmission problems.
It was number four?
Five.
Five, okay.
Five is currently
box
the one.
Number five, yes.
Yeah, we're working on. So. So, Brian, yeah, we need your expertise. We need your ideas of people learning their own stuff here on the East Coast. So that's appreciate you having you on the show and sharing what Defenders Northwest is all about. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. But you're not leaving because we're going to continue on with the show. And when we come back, we're going to talk about our No Restrictions Contest. And now an audio gift to our podcast listeners. 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, the Land Rover edition, as adapted by Steve Schrodenfelder. Thanks to Chip for the post on Facebook. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the trails, every Jeep was stranded, their progress like snails. They had no shovels, no rope, and no winch, no CB, no cell phone, to get out of their pinch. When out from a mud pit there arose such a clatter, all the wheelers came running to see what was the matter. I saw some poor Jeep, all covered in crud. He had blown his motor, trying to get free of the mud. And as he stood there, I noticed his glowing red face, and I knew in an instant he wanted out of this place. I glanced at his roof, and it was all I could see. He pleaded for help from my worn winch and from me. So I sprang to the front of my trusty old Rover, spooled out the winch cable, said, "Hook her up, Grover." He went for a swim in the watery hell, and I laughed as he turned brown and started to smell. He hooked up the cable to his buried front hook. I put a coat on the line, like it says in the book. I winched him out quickly, a very fast session, and I charged him a C-note to teach him a lesson. I then drove my D90 through the same mud and same muck. No problem for me, 'cause I had a real truck. I wound down my window as I drove out of sight, and smugly yelled, "Next time, stay home Christmas night." Welcome back to number 33, and it's time for our No Restrictions Contest. And we had no one actually join the contest, but we had nothing to give away either, so maybe we'll do it again, but do a contest in the future now that I have something to give away. But the contest was about if you could, there was no restrictions, and you could have any Land Rover ever made, which one would it be? And I'm going to limit you because I know what's going to happen. We've talked about this before. You're going to say, "Oh, I would like six of them." No, you have to pick one. This is one. You got to pick one. All so right. I'm going to start with you, Harold. What Land Rover?
Well, they are like potato chips. It's hard to have just one. But today's pick would be.
Oh, today's pick.
Today's pick.
It's like the daily number.
Truck utility, comma, air portable, general purpose, comma, 4x4.
Interesting.
There were only 23 of them made. They were designed and engineered by Land Rover for the military to swim.
You could then join the
storm Brian's party, proudly showing off my leaf springs, but too frickin' bad I got here on my own.
He wins. Are those the ones made for the RAF?
Shot for that.
I'm sorry, Brian?
We'd definitely pour you an extra shot for that.
All right.
Are those the RAF ones?
I think they're Army.
Oh, they're Army. Oh, I don't think I heard about those ones.
I don't think the RAF needed to float too much.
Yeah, true. Well, yeah, if the Army's floating, or the, excuse me, the Air Force is floating.
The Air Force is floating. They got bigger problems than just what truck to drive.
Yeah. All right, next up in the cavalcade of Land Rover no Restriction Contest, Morgan from the Green Mountain State.
I know, obviously, I really like series Rovers, but I would have to go with a Defender 130.
Any specific year?
Or
style?
No, I'm sure I could narrow it down. A dual cab, obviously. Dual cab with the bed. Very similar, for some reason, to what Bella and Louisa drive.
It's a fine beast. One of my favorite trucks that we've got.
And I assume it's going to have to be a diesel, right, Morgan?
Yes, absolutely.
But of course. Next up, from the fine state of Washington, the only state named after a president by name. What is the nickname for Washington?
The Evergreen State? Or is that Colorado?
No, I don't think...
No, that's a different kind of green they have there.
Although, I don't think Washington's far behind. Yes. I don't know what the nickname is for Washington. But Evergreen, there's a nice connection there between the Green Mountain State, the Evergreen State.
So this will be our write-in for our listeners for next month. Please tell us, what is the nickname
of the correct
state?
Yes, if you can tell us the correct nickname for the state of Washington. So, Brian, what would be your no-restriction Land Rover? I'm guessing it's a Defender?
No, it's a Disco.
It's an Evoque, yes.
the Chevoque? No.
How about a Jag F-Pace?
No, mine's easy. Mine's the 2006 Rest of the World's 110, the last of the 300 TDI-powered trucks. All white, all left-hand drive.
Last of the non-computerized trucks, then.
That's it.
You're not allowed to pick the truck I was going to take. I wanted a nice 110, Defender 110. Thank you, Diesel. That was going to be mine.
Choose the next one off your list.
I guess I'll have to choose the next one off my list.
Of course, they made than one. You could, I suppose, take the same truck.
Yeah.
And you don't like the white, right?
I like the white.
Okay.
No, though. White what is the appropriate color.
For those with no imagination.
It isn't.
Oh, yeah. Fine. Harold's the one who doesn't like white.
Moving on. In our contest cavalcade, I now get to select from the Keystone State, although Pennsylvania is Sylvan, so there's Sylvan, which is forest, which is green, so there's our green connection, assuming that Evergreen State in Washington. So, since a nice Defender 110 was taken, I'm just going to go with that because that's what I would like to pick. What would be my number two choice? My number two choice of any Land Rover would be a fine, fully functional 2002 Freelander.
Do you think there's any of those left that are fully functional?
They are none that are fully functional. But,
and you already had that as your first choice originally, right?
Wait, before you jump all over my stuff, that was my very first Land Rover. That's the one I selected because I could afford it. And
very first choice, and we see where that got you.
Yes, it spawned a podcast. And I got to know a bunch of fine, fine people all around the world.
It's a good gateway drug.
It was. It was a fine vehicle. I do miss it. So that's why I'm going to choose that as my ultimate no restriction, if that's what I could have. It would have to be fully functional, please.
Yeah, that's the challenge.
How many rear main seals? How many windscreens can one go through in one truck?
Because if a dead, bashed up, rusted out one is what you want, I can make that dream happen very quickly.
Indeed, I know. I think I saw another one, a yellow four-door, just the top of it, somewhere in Pittsburgh, and some pushed
really,
off
the
side.
Really, an intact roof panel.
Actually, yeah, you could use it. You could use it.
If I wanted to, but I don't think so.
All right, I'll give everybody a bonus option. Anybody have anything else? Another bonus, no restriction Land Rover? I'll give you a bonus. Anybody?
An RAF spec Marshall ambulance?
Or even a prototype. Even if it's a prototype, maybe a one-off. So you would a Marshall ambulance?
Only an RAF spec one, though.
That was one of only, 200 made or something, right?
Or in Series 3, only 20 of them were made.
20, okay. Brian?
Probably the CKD, the knockdown kit.
Ooh.
Would you want it knocked down or reassembled?
Still in the crates.
Okay. Would you keep it that way?
That's a tough call. That's a really tough call. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, you know, you need to keep it in the original packaging. I mean, that's just otherwise it's not collectible.
Loses all value and it's no longer mint in box.
You take it out and play with it, loses all value.
That'd be really fun to build one from new old stock.
Yeah, that actually would be really cool.
Yeah,
And you'd have to film that, and that could be a good video. Yeah, that'd be really kick ass. Morgan, you got a bonus?
You know, mine. I'm gonna sort of cop out and just go with a 200 TDI.
Just the engine. That's it.
Just the engine.
Just the engine. That's
the motor.
Yeah,
that could be fixed. That's an easy thing to do.
Does the motor have to be functional?
It. Yeah, and I really need the Defender headers on it.
So can go in your truck? Is that what?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. It's not on my planned upgrade list, but I'm annoyed with trying to get parts for the Daihatsu engine in mine.
Given your existent fleet, I would think you could pretty much settle for any rover that ran.
Yeah. Totally.
So what is this?
Any vehicle that will stay running for a period of time, but I'm a masochist, so.
Well, you own a Land Rover Series truck. I kind of sometimes wish we had a video. This is a video podcast, but just to see Brian's reactions to our conversation.
Well, it takes a certain amount of masochism to own a series truck, and it takes an even greater degree of masochism to ride in a series truck that's being driven by John.
Wow,
off road, dude, that's torture.
It's leaf sprung. What do you want me to do? One has to drive as one has to drive to get to where you're going.
Well, I'm not arguing. I'm just saying your vehicle is it's a ride.
Mr. Toad's Wild Ride there.
Something like that.
You know, you got a leaf sprung truck and you're in a manual
with said leaves rusted together nice and tight,
and you've got a very rocky surface. So that's the way it goes. We're going to conclude the podcast. Does anybody have anything they wish to say before we close her out? I'm going to leave this part in just because I feel like it.
I think that's a good ending.
You think that's a good ending? That's it?
Yeah. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Brian, any closing thoughts?
No, thank you again for having me, guys.
I'm declaring you friend of the show.
I appreciate it.
You've joined us once. They seem to be a pretty cool guy. We like what you're doing. So I've declared you friend of the show.
Don't worry. It doesn't take too much of your time.
We'll have to find an excuse to get you out for one of the events.
Indeed. It might be sooner than you think. Who knows? We'll
make sure to show up with leaf springs just to say screw you.
You only get one invitation.
Ooh.
So we'll make it count.
Thanks very much for listening today to the Center Steer Podcast. This has been number 33. We're pushing 2-3 years now.
We are a third of the way to 100.
Wow. Jeez. I'd like you to share the podcast, to go out and tell your friends about it, especially if they are Land Rover people or they're Defender people, because apparently there's two different kind of people now. There's Land Rover people and Defender people. Right, Brian?
Indeed.
So share it with the...
And apparently there are Defender people who aren't fans.
So go out and share the podcast with them to encourage listenership. The only thing we get is personal satisfaction. Right now, that's all we get. We're not paid. Nothing else. All volunteer. We're having a good time to discuss Land Rovers, inform the community, as Brian is aptly doing in a different way, encouraging the community to get together and talk about Land Rovers and their shared interests. So please share it for us. And also communicate with us. If you wish, you can, as you can see, tweet at us. You can email us. Go out to the website. You'll see all that locations. It's at centersteer.com, which is CENTRE.com. And we're also available on Facebook. You can go out and check us out there. And don't forget to check out Morgan's own site. He does seriesparts.com. And it's functioning well and doing very well right now, is it not?
For the moment.
It's like a series truck, right?
Yeah.
Indeed. And finally, go out and check our website out. We'll have show notes to all this. And if you need a link to Brian's site, which is Defenders Northwest, the most important thing I want you to do, though, is check out his Instagram account. I think his pictures are kick-ass.
Good stuff, Brian.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. Number 33, we'll talk to you in another month or so.
The Center Steer theme song, Sunset Rider by the Tritons, is available from Nivio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.nivio.com.
our podcasts are much like a good overland trip. We have a plan and we never follow it.